Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But don't you know we're gonna have a
started to burn too many things we found. That's the wonderful Dar Williams singing with Pete Seeger and David Burns, opening up another hour here at the Green Power and Wellness Show. So glad to be with you all here on PRN-FM. Thank you to the crew in New York. We've got a ton to talk about. The Kavanaugh catastrophe, of course, and some also some very, very special news from some very special people. I'm joined by one of them, Clifford J. Tasner. You with us?
Yes, I'm here.
All right, Cliff. Good to talk with you. You're Sluggo. Here with me in Southern California. Yes, I'm Harvey Sluggo Wasserman. I guess I should identify myself as usual for our fabulous listeners here. Clifford, you are the president of the Southern California chapter of the Americans for Democratic Action and the national secretary. Is that right?
That's correct.
All right. Good, good, good. And we also should be joined by Danny Sheehan and Sarah Nelson. Are you guys with us, Danny and Sarah?
Yes, we are.
All right. You both together there in Santa Cruz?
Well, Danny should be calling in on another phone. Is he there?
Danny, you with us yet? All right. Sarah, you are more than capable of carrying on. I want to start. We're going to talk about, of course, Kavanaugh today. There's some awful news and things like that. And Clifford Tasner is doing a tremendous amount of work on that. So we want to get into it. We have the full hour to talk about things. But, Sarah, I wanted to start with you. First off, you have a great event to celebrate that you were telling me about yesterday, which I have not seen at all in the news, but is certainly newsworthy, the canonization of Oscar Romero. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. Yes, he, on October 14th, which is a week from Sunday, he will be canonized. He will be made the very first person, the very first saint for justice and human rights. He was killed by the death squads in 1980 when he was... He was on the radio every single Sunday, and his sermon, people would be around the radio all throughout the country listening to his sermon because he was the only one talking about what was really happening in the country with the disappeared and all the people who were being killed, etc. And he was standing up against this, and he was pleading with the people in the death squads to stop killing their own brothers and sisters and their own citizens. And after he made a very passionate plea for this, the next day, within 24 hours, when he was doing the Eucharist, he was shot and he was killed, and 240,000 people came to his funeral, and they then mowed down with guns many of those people who were at the big march that was his funeral march. And he's known all over Central and South America and also the Americas. The United States. He is a person who is beloved because he was the voice for the voiceless, and he stood for justice for the poor and the oppressed. And it's a great thing that under Pope Francis he is being made a saint, because always before, when people were martyred, it was because they wouldn't deny that they were members of the Catholic Church, or, you know, there was never anyone martyred for their actions for justice and for the poor. There was never anyone that was martyred for those reasons that became a saint. So this is historic, and it's another move by Pope Francis that I think is a very positive one.
So Oscar Romero, he was a... What's that?
Yeah, Yeah, so we're having an event from 4 to 6 on that Sunday, a week from Sunday, October 14th, to celebrate this. And there will be a woman speaking who was actually at that funeral march and who remembers, you know, what was going on in El Salvador and how important Romero was to the people. So she'll be speaking. It'll be great. And we're going, there'll be Salvadoran food, and we'll have music and a lot of information also about what our institute is doing to carry on his legacy in justice.
Formerly the Christic Institute, and now you're the Romero Institute. Is that right?
That's right. That's right.
And where will this event be?
It'll be in the, there's a big hall, beautiful place, at the Mission in Santa Cruz. It's called the Holy Cross Church. And it'll be there, and we expect a big turnout to come, and everyone is invited that would like to celebrate this with us.
So Sarah Nelson and Danny Sheehan, Danny, you've just joined us. You are the heads of the or the organizers of the Romero Institute. You've done a tremendous amount of work. I mean, I've known you guys for 40 years,
and it's outrageous, isn't it? 40 years, yeah.
Right? Especially since we're all three of us are only 27. I mean, that's amazing. But
that's right.
If I sat here with Clifford Tasner listening in to go over your bios, we'd be the hour would end. So, Dan, do you want to say anything real quick about Archbishop Romero, now Saint Romero?
Well, it's extremely interesting. He is a kind of a paradigmatic figure in the church because he started out being really quite conservative. He was very conservative, kind of this administrative type, and those are the kind of guys that a lot of times get made bishops and archbishops because they take care of churches and they know wealthy people and can raise money to put a new roof on the church and things like that. They're not, a lot of times, not the most spiritual people in the whole church, and they're not the most compassionate. But the fact is, the charisms that caused him to be chosen to be the archbishop were challenged by the events that were taking place around him. And ultimately, one of his very close friends, another priest, was murdered by the death squad under Roberto Dubuisson. And he became so traumatized by that event that he actually started looking into in much more detail what it is that exactly was going on, which had been going on all around him. But it finally dawned on him that he needed to speak out to talk about this. And as he was doing it, he started to see the value of the primarily the Jesuits had been engaged in El Salvador and in Guatemala and other places in establishing these things they call base communities. And in these base communities, the Jesuits and some of the Catholic sisters were actually having groups of people, peasants and local people, get together to read through the Gospels. And when they were reading through the Gospels, they started saying to themselves, well, gee, the yeah, things that are being said right about Rome and their suppression of the poor people and stuff like that, that sounds awfully familiar about what the United States is doing. And so it started dawning on him that the things that have been being said by the Jesuits and the other people that were organizing the peasants into collectives opposing the oligarchs in El Salvador were true. And as he looked into it more and more deeply, he became more and more profoundly committed to seeing the connections between the basic principles that were being outlined in the first century Christian communities, who, of course, remember, were all Jewish people, and that they were just very radical, and that they believed that Jesus was the person who had been predicted throughout biblical passages to be coming at the appropriate time to help lead their people out from under a new type of bondage by Rome. And so he started talking about these things. And, of course, immediately the Salvadorian government, the military fascist government that was funded and supported by the United States administrations, you know, both Democrat and Republic and Republican, you know, started seeing him as an enemy and ordering him to stop talking like this. And what he said is his friends started telling him that, look, if you don't stop talking out like this in your masses, you're in the homilies, the sermons that you're giving in the masses against the government, you know, they're going to kill you. And he said, well, if they kill me, I will rise once again in the voice of my people. And he was murdered the day after he issued a public call from a homily on Sunday, asking all of the military people, the young men who were dragooned into the military of El Salvador, to simply refuse their orders and to stop killing the people and stop kidnapping them and disappearing them and torturing them. And when he called upon them, he said that basically, you know, they were morally required to refuse these orders in order to maintain being part of the Christian community. And when he did that, Roberto Dubuisson issued the order to have him assassinated. And so they assassinated him the very next day, actually, in the midst of his saying Mass in a Catholic chapel. Just as he raised the host, they shot him dead right in the chapel.
Oh, my God. And what year was this?
This was 1982.
1982? Oh, my God.
No, it was 1980 when he was killed. It was not March 24th, 1980.
So Clifford J. Tasner, president of the Southern California ADA, your patron saint was Eleanor Roosevelt. Do you think that maybe Pope Francis would make her a saint one of these days?
Yeah, I wouldn't count it, but I do want to say something. What's very, very encouraging about the canonization of Saint Romero is we've seen two ultra-conservative popes who were responsible for really shutting down liberation theology, which was one of those positive movements in Catholicism in the last century. And they disavowed what Archbishop Romero was trying to do. And it's really nice to see that this pope is embracing it, because it strikes me, I'm not a Catholic, I'm Jewish, but it strikes me that one of the most positive things that clergy people can do is afflict the comfortable and comfort the afflicted. It's what the media should do. It's what art should be doing. It's what we activists need to do. And if you're doing it the other way around, where you're afflicting the afflicted and comforting the comfortable, you're not doing it right. So I'm very heartened to see that this pope is canonizing a liberation theology. It's a very positive thing, and I hope a number of these priests who were and nuns who were standing up for this kind of thing were martyred in these wars, these dirty wars, and it would be nice to see more of them represented among
these
saints.
Well, the only person in American history who's ever been really widely referred to as a saint was Eugene V. Debs, the great socialist.
Sure.
He was called the American saint. But he was Protestant. I don't think he was Catholic. So we had Eleanor Roosevelt and Eugene V. Debs.
Yeah, Eleanor Roosevelt was the founder of Americans for Democratic Action. She founded it in 1947 with Hubert Humphrey and a number of others. And we are trying to continue her legacy today in Southern California and across the country. And in fact, tonight we're going to be phone banking Alaskan voters to urge them to put some pressure on Lisa Murkowski to disavow this nominee. You know,
Kavanaugh. I want to get to him because I know once we start talking about him, the rest of the show is going to fly by. So there is one thing. And so, listeners, if you're waiting for your Kavanaugh fix from three truly great guests, it is coming. But I want to get cover something very quickly beforehand. Danny and Sarah, and Cliff, you'll jump in. But Danny and Sarah, you've been deeply involved with the fight over the Dakota Pipeline and with the struggle of the Native Indigenous peoples up in the Dakotas. Can you tell us the latest developments? Because I think they've been pretty positive.
Sure. Yeah. What's happened is, as you recall, During the period between August of 2016 and basically February of 2017, in that 1 year period, some 843 people were arrested and charged with various types of offenses, criminal offenses, by the state of North Dakota because of their protesting the construction of the 910,000 gallon an hour crude oil pipeline that was being built basically from right up by the Canadian border, actually from Sarah's hometown, Stanley, North Dakota. And it was being built, you know, all the way down through the center of the country to go all the way down to the Gulf of Mexico. And all of that oil was going to be shipped out. It was going to be refined there and shipped out and sold to the rest of the world. None of it being used to relieve any type of alleged energy crisis in the United States. But the Obama administration had stopped it, along with the XL, the Keystone XL pipeline, the big tar sands pipeline. The Obama administration ordered both of them stopped unless and until they provided a full-scale environmental protection survey and study to see what the implications would be. And when Trump came in, he came, the first day he was in office, he issued his presidential executive order banning all Muslims from the United States. And the second day, he issued the order ordering the Keystone XL pipeline and the Dakota Access pipeline to go forward, no matter what the environmental consequences were, alleging that it was part of the need to relieve this energy crisis in the United States and to make us energy independent. And so they immediately began recommencing the construction of the pipeline, the Dakota Access Pipeline, directly under the sole source of fresh drinking water for the entire Great Sioux Nation up in North Dakota. And the people had risen up against it. There were upwards of 10,000 people at a time there at the site in the pathway of the pipeline. And the company, the Energy Transfer Partners from Texas, from Dallas, Texas, the oil company, they called in the Tiger Swan Private Military Corporation out of North Carolina, which was basically a knockoff from the Blackwater International. And they came in and basically declared war on the Lakota people and started characterizing them, racially profiling them as anti-Christian, anti-capitalist, religiously driven, indigenous, jihadist terrorists, and began to arrest them, began to wiretap all their telephones, began to place surveillance on them and doing full terrorist investigations of all of them. And they developed an entire chart, a graphic of the structure, purported structure of this terrorist operation. And Chase Iron Eyes was placed at the very top, the apex of the entire pyramid. And he was the 2016 National Democratic Party nominee for Congress, for the sole seat of Congress in North Dakota. And so they targeted him as the guy who led this insurrection against the state of North Dakota and the pipeline. That over the period of the year, 800 of these 842 people that were arrested, over 700 of them were all acquitted, and the cases were dismissed. And there was another 100 of them that just refused to ever come back for trial. So that covers about 800 of them. The other 42 or 43 people were charged and brought to court, and they put up various criminal defenses, and a substantial portion of those were all acquitted, and the charges were dismissed as well. The major case was that was being planned to confront the oil corporation was Chase Iron Eyes. He was the one, the only one out of 843 people that had been charged with basically inciting the riot against the pipeline. And our office, the Lakota People's Law Office, which is a wholly integrated auxiliary of our Romero Institute with offices up in Rapid City, South Dakota, were his chief defense counsel. And when we presented, this case was held to one of the very last cases. It was scheduled to begin, actually, on November 5th, upcoming, the day before the national elections, actually. And we were required by the court to submit our defense evidence and information, preliminary evidence and information, pretrial, on August 20th. And we did. And the very next morning, the state dismissed the charges of inciting a riot and dismissed the charges of trespassing we it turns out that Chase Ironhide was the first Lakota person from the Great Sioux Nation ever charged with trespassing on that land, and it therefore gave us him standing to challenge the legality of the purported transfer of all of that property to the United States government, who in turn ended up selling it to others who sold it to the Dakota Access Pipeline Corporation.
So you were able, so they probably didn't want anything to do with you in court on this charge because they had charged an indigenous person with trespassing on his own land. I love that.
Yeah, that's right. And so, the fact is the United States government had created this entire legal structure that had basically foreclosed any tribe who was going to be legally recognized by the United States government, foreclosed them from ever challenging the illegality of the seizure of their land. The United States government put it into their constitution, saying that if we recognize you as a U.S. government recognized tribe, one of the conditions is that you never have any right to demand the return of any of your land, no matter how unlawfully taken. All you can do is go to the Indian Court of Claims and ask for just compensation, at which point the United States government will print up a number of greenbacks and put them in to pay for your commodities. But because of that structure, they had never had standing to challenge the legality, the illegality of the taking of the land. So we ended up discovering or figuring out that Chase now had the right to challenge the illegality of the taking of the land to begin with. And so when we submitted that information to the court on August 20th, the state just freaked out and dismissed the charges against him. So
that must have been a really a great party that night, man. I wish I had been there.
You know us, Lugo. I mean, we were sort of chomping at the bit to get him into court and stomp him.
Yeah,
and get right. This information out. We're still in the process right now of interviewing all of the witnesses that we were going to be presenting at trial. We're interviewing them on videotape so that we can present to the world the actual case that was going to be presented against them prior to their dismissing the charges. So we're in that process right now.
Excuse me, but this is really important, Harvey, because Tiger Swan is basically now, it was having all these big contracts with the Pentagon in the Middle East with Blackwater for years and years. Now they have become really the corporate security arm for the fossil fuel industry. And they have more corporate contracts now than they do Pentagon. And they make a lot of money doing this. And they are, they've got battalions, they've got fighter jets. It's horrible. I mean, they're like a private army. And what they did in the Dakotas was to build the template for how they were going to operate inside our country. And now they're down in Louisiana, trying to get a foothold in that whole fight over oil. And then we've just found out recently that nuns in Pennsylvania who were trying to protect their land from a pipeline and are now headed to the Supreme Court on a legal fight, that she gave a presentation at this recent climate summit. And at the end of her presentation, she said, oh, I forgot to tell you, they called us terrorists. So this whole template that was developed up in the Dakotas is showing up in Pennsylvania, it's showing up in Louisiana, and we know we have to get all this information out to everybody so that they understand what's happening to them in these different parts of the
country. Well, Cliff Kasner at the Americans for Democratic Action, you have a legal arm, don't you? Are you involved in any of these kinds of litigation?
I think the national does. Our local chapter, we're really doing a lot of grassroots organizing. We have two organizers on the ground in Southern California because right now there's about 6 seats in Southern California that are red seats that could flip to blue in the Congress.
Right.
If we're going to take back Congress, doing it through Southern California is really smart. And ADA has found that, we've got actually 4 of the candidates running in those races are actual progressives. So we're on the ground.
Well, here this is good to have you folks meet. Clifford, let's switch gears now. We've done our half hour. Thank you so much for that information.
Danny and
I want to say this about the pipeline is if you know when Mr. Kavanaugh, if Mr. Kavanaugh gets on the court, one piece of business that I'm sure they're going to want to take up is making it much harder to protest against corporations because it could interfere with their profit margin. You know, and that's
these two pipelines, the Dakota and the XL Keystone XL are completely illegal.
There's absolutely no justification for them whatsoever. I mean, it's completely insane.
Well, there is a justification, but it is definitely a corporate one. I mean, that bitumen is just going to be sent to Louisiana and refined and then sent to China. You know, it's not going to benefit America's energy needs at all. And it's not going to benefit our environment of the planet's environment. And it's only going to create a very few jobs of the people who erect the pipeline, and then that's it.
It's an egregious thing.
We need to be moving to another model. I'm only disappointed that Justin Trudeau is sort of, it seems like he's pretty friendly with the petroleum industry up there, and those pipelines don't get built. It seems like they're trying to build one all the way to British Columbia. I know they're running into some problems, but I was kind of hoping when he got elected that maybe he would stand up to these people. And it seems like he's in bed with them, too.
Let's switch gears now, and talk for the next half hour. Thank you so much, Danny, and Sarah, of course, stay with us, please, for telling us about Archbishop Romero. I'm sure we're probably the only radio station in the whole country that has mentioned that, and it's a very big deal. And thank you also not only for the report, but for your incredible work with the Dakota Nation. I mean, it's really mind-boggling what you've done up there, and I know a lot of it couldn't have happened without the two of you. So our hats are and our hearts are more than open to what you've done there. I mean, it's an incredible accomplishment getting those people off, and then discovering I still charging an indigenous with trespassing. I mean, there's a Lakota term called chutzpah for that one. So
thank you.
So let's reverse gears here now and get into this whole Kavanaugh insanity. And Clifford Tasner, the ADA is extremely active in this. And then I want to talk to Sarah, of course, and Danny, especially about North Dakota. But tell us what you've been doing on the Kavanaugh situation here.
Well, we've been phone banking Alaska. We have a list of some thousands of Alaskan Democrats and.
Hello. Hello.
Clifford. Yeah, Sarah, you're with us.
Yeah, we can hear you, Sluggo, but we can't hear Clifford.
Clifford, you're going to have to call back because you seem to have gone mute on us here. just right in the middle. I hope he's okay. Clifford, are you back? No. All right. Well, he'll have to call back
in. I'm glad he may have exploded doing that work.
In rage.
All right. Sorry about that.
I actually pushed the wrong button. Somebody tried to call me, and I didn't.
You hit the mute button, probably.
We have two Democratic senators. I mean, one of them is pretty underwhelming and has not been serving our needs as a state for about 26 years, even though she's got a blue jersey on and has an actually progressive opposition. There's an opponent running against her who would be great to send to the Senate to represent California the way Californians would like to be represented.
You're talking about Dianne Feinstein, of course.
Yeah, Dianne Feinstein.
I was at a gathering.
Completely wretched disappointment to anybody who doesn't want to see corporations put in check, you know. And, anyway, but we can get into that. But we're calling Alaskans to call their senator. The thing is, elected officials tend to prefer to hear from their constituents. So we're going to start the evening tonight calling Mainers and ask them to put some pressure on Susan Collins. And then we're going to switch over to Alaska because Alaska is an hour earlier. So they won't even be home by this time we start phone banking. So we're going to have a late night of it at the Peace Center tonight. We're going to be making some phone calls.
Here in California.
Hoping to have an effect. You know, my sense is that the fix is in. and that this incredibly cursory investigation by the FBI, which is utterly circumscribed to prevent any real investigation from happening, is going to provide cover for people like Susan Collins to vote with the Republic, with her party, and say, oh, well, there was an investigation, see, and it didn't turn up anything. Well, it didn't turn up anything because it wasn't supposed to and it wasn't permitted to. You know,
right.
That was the whole point.
So we have, Clifford, I wanted you to mention very quickly, you have an event on Sunday in Southern California. I'm sure a few of our listeners how can people get a hold of you to find out about this event Sunday afternoon?
Well, they can go to adasocal.org. We're having a garden party at the lovely home of Jan and Jerry at 2 p.m. on Sunday. And we're raising money because we've got organizers on the ground trying to flip Congress and turn it from red to blue. And we would like people to come support that effort because it's a worthy effort. And we need to have at least, you know, I have these conversations with my mother. My mother's 92, and she spends a lot of time watching MSNBC. And she'll call me up and she'll say, they got him. I'll say, who do they got? They got Trump. They got him. How do they have him? Well, they got the goods on him. He's going to be out of there. I said, no, he's not. She said, sure, they have all this stuff on him. I said, the problem is there's not a single apparatus in government that isn't controlled by Trump and the Republicans. So they don't got nothing. So if we want to see us got him in any way, we're really going to have to take back the Congress. It'd be nice if we could take back the Senate. I'm not holding my breath. But if we take back Congress, we at least can start investigating the crimes that this government is committing, you know, and
right.
That would be a nice start, you know.
In California, how do people, one more time with your website real quick, and then we'll go to Sarah.
ADASocal.org.
ADASocal.org.
Information about our garden party, and on Monday we're going to put up all our endorsements for the November election. We've got actually some very decent progressives are running because it's not enough to elect Democrats. It's not enough. I think there are a lot of people who are what I call team players, and if somebody's got a blue jersey on, that's good enough. But here's an example. Dianne Feinstein has been serving California for 26 years. She ran on an anti-immigrant and pro-death penalty platform. And only very recently did she change her tune on the death penalty because she managed to attract a more progressive, viable opponent. And, you know, so she suddenly changed her stance after years and years of campaigning on her love of the death penalty. And when she ran for office, she basically made a speech saying that the biggest problem in California is that all these quote-unquote illegals are having children. 40% of children born in California at the time she made the speech are, she said, illegals, and she claimed they were sucking the state dry. And it turns out, actually, every study indicates that the immigrants that come in, even those who are undocumented, put a lot more into the economy than they take out of it. And
absolutely.
She was,
okay,
you know,
so
on a kind of jingoistic line.
Her opponent
has voted to try 13-year-olds as adults. She's the one instrumental in passing the bill that allows the NSA to spy on our cell phones. She wanted to build a wall with Mexico in 2006. She was responsible for that bill, to build a wall.
And
with
so
Mexico.
Her,
everybody laughed
her opponent
at
here,
this wall.
Her opponent here in California. Her opponent here in California is Kevin DeLeon.
He's the president of the Senate. And unlike Dianne Feinstein, who's actually made a speech saying that we should be patient with Donald Trump because maybe he'll turn out to be a good president, Kevin DeLeon is actually opposing Donald Trump in every possible way. He was instrumental. He wrote a bill that stipulates that we will be 100% renewable energy by 2040. He helped shepherd a Medicare for All bill through the state Senate, only to have it defeated, put to sleep in the House because the Speaker of our Assembly got a lot of money from the health insurance companies to put it to bed. This is our problem in California. It's a blue state. So the corporations have realized there's no reason to buy Republicans when they can just buy corporate Democrats. So it's
right.
kind
so
of
Danny and Sarah, Danny and Sarah, you are Californians. You're in Santa Cruz. But you've had a lot of time up in the Dakotas. And I read just this morning that Heidi Heitkamp, who's running for re-election in North Dakota, has said that she will oppose Brett Kavanaugh. So, Sarah, as the only woman on the phone right now, I don't want to prejudice your opinion, but what do you think of this low-life scumbag piece of garbage, Kavanaugh, who's running for the Supreme Court, and how are we going to stop him?
Yeah, no, it's very disturbing, and I know that there are women all over the country who are just devastated listening and watching this. It's kind of like the way we felt with the Hollywood Access story that came out. It's shocking to realize we have a predator in the White House and we are about to put a predator into the Supreme Court. And I'm not saying that Kavanaugh is doing things now like he did, but he clearly, I mean, I have no question in my mind that he, at the time of his life that they're looking at, he was a predator. And so it's, look, first of all, I think with Heidi Heitkamp, I think they've done some surveys in the states where there are kind of swing votes like that. And the price that the Democrats will pay from the Democratic side, the loss of support they will get from the Democrats is greater than the support they will get from the Republicans if they should vote for this guy. So I'm hoping that the Democrats will stay, you know, will vote against Kavanaugh. He's a disaster, and he's a disaster that it will last for 30 or 40 years. And it will affect so many things, not only the right to choose, but it will affect Native Americans in very serious ways. And as you say, he's going to vote for corporations all the time. He's going to vote to protect the president, Trump, from some, you know, prosecution questions that'll come before the court, probably. It is very, very serious. It makes me think of Germany, because, you know, before Hitler took over, really, they'd already put in all the laws. When you take over the courts and they are laying in about 100 and some federal judges in other lower levels than the Supreme Court, they're just laying them in constantly, putting them in. And by the time that Trump gets out of there, and hopefully it'll be before 2020, they will have put in so much judicial power for the right wing. We're not talking about the Republicans now like my father used to be, or, you know, we're not talking about what we used to think of as normal Republicans. This is the right wing. And it has emerged with increasing strength. It causes this, what we call chaos. It never will work across the aisle. It never will negotiate, collaborate, forget it. That's not how they operate. And they keep talking about, you know, the left and the right as somehow it's the same. It's not the same. This whole situation that we find ourselves in has been driven systematically by the right wing. And that's what we got to figure out. We got to figure out not just about Trump and Kavanaugh personally. We've got to figure out how we take the country back from this rising right wing.
Well, it's certainly a challenge. This morning, there's only one Democrat left in play on this nomination.
That's Joe Manchin, who's
Joe
way
Manchin
ahead in his race.
From West,
actually, he has nothing to
West
do
Virginia
by doing the right thing.
But if both Flake and Susan Collins vote for Kavanaugh, he's going to get in. That's the way the numbers seem to stack up.
And I'll bet he'll love doing it, too. So, you know, this Kavanaugh, it's interesting because, it's not just that he sexually assaulted a woman, and possibly more than one woman, and it might be more plausible if he admitted that he blacked out a lot as a teenager. You know, he might not have been aware that he did it. I suspect he probably is, but I'm sure he's done a lot of things that he has no idea of, because there's a huge legacy of his drinking that everyone who knew him talks about. A guy even
yes.
wrote a book.
Danny?
A friend wrote a book about it, you know.
Yes,
but
right.
The thing
Danny
is that Kavanaugh... Hello?
Yes, and you... Well, Danny Sheen, did you want to jump in on this?
Well, I think the real question here is there anything more and different to be said about Kavanaugh? The fact is that the regular Democratic Party, and that is the new more moderate Democratic Party, since the collapse of the Soviet Union, the whole Richard Gebhardt Democratic Leadership Conference led kind of Clinton-Gore Democratic Party, you know, didn't have any real intention of fighting too hard against him. They kind of realized he was going to be coming in. What happened is that this rising threat from the progressive wing of the Democratic Party started rising up and making clear that we were going to mount this major campaign to remove them. There are some 60 congressional districts still where the Democrats win by anywhere from 15 to 40 points every single congressional cycle. And yet they have Democratic candidates in those positions that vote only like 51, 52% of the time for liberal positions. And they're all these mealy-mouthed middle marginalists. And the Democratic Party just keeps them in because they're Democrats. And so it gives them control of the various committees and the chairmanships and everything. And so they knew that there was this rising resentment on the part of the progressive wing of the party to come in and remove them, and so they all went crazy. But the fact is they had already laid in procedures by means of which, for example, a simple majority can approve judges in the Senate. It used to be a two-thirds majority vote, and they've gone along with all kinds of changes in the procedures of the Senate that, in fact, have gotten them into the position where they're in now. So that I think...
Well, let me... Go ahead, Danny. Yeah.
The problem isn't the filibuster at all.
Danny,
the filibuster is an obstacle.
Let Danny finish. Danny, I interrupted you. Go ahead and finish there.
No. I'm just saying is that the lesson that needs to be taken away from here is that the regular Democrats, the Democratic Leadership Conference-led new, more moderate Democratic Party, has to be replaced by progressives. And that Cliff was talking about, you know, these districts in California where they're going to try to take seats away from the Republicans. The problem is that it's very, very difficult for progressives to win in those districts that have been so gerrymandered. But you look at the other 60 congressional districts across the country where the Democrats could, you know, they could elect a ham sandwich if they nominated them in the primary. So the key is the primary contest that needs to be done. That needs to be the response of people to this Kavanaugh thing, not people jumping out of first-story windows and lamenting and just repeating the same things that the regular Democrats have raised for criticizing it. I mean, you'll notice that the regular Democrats, they abandoned entirely talking about what his actual positions are as a corporate stooge, this guy. You know, they refuse to talk about it. They have to get him attacking women. You know, there's something that they hold the American public in such low esteem that they think they have to descend to that type of charges against this guy, you know, in showing that he, you know, pukes on his friends in high school. There needs to be a more fundamental criticism of what Kavanaugh really represents. And when you heard Whitehead, that Senator Whitehead from Rhode Island, in his pronouncement, he said, look, let's start out and keep this in context. This guy is a guy who votes all of the time for the corporate interests that are represented by the right wing of the Republican Party. And he said that, and, you know, there's been 70 decisions in the past several years of the Roberts Court that have gone 5-4, always in favor of the corporate interests. And this guy is going to cement that. And he's going to make it,
right,
you know, a lock for all the corporate interests. That's the type of analysis that needs to be understood by the American people. That's what Kavanaugh really represents here. This is a kind of a manipulation on the part of the regular Democratic Party. Let's go after the women's vote by showing that he's a predator. You know, well, that's fine. I mean, it's a terrible thing for him to be. But the fact of the matter is the regular Democratic Party has completely abandoned the fundamental criticism of him because the regular Democratic Party agrees with the Republicans on those things for the most
part. That's right.
And that's what we have to do. That has to be our response to the Kavanaugh nomination and him going to the Supreme Court. They've declared war on us through the corporations, and the people have
absolutely
to rise up, take back those seats, increase the number of people in the Progressive Caucus in the House of Representatives. And then in 2020, between 2018 and 2020, there has to be a massive campaign around the entire United States to put in at least 60 new progressives into the House of Representatives and to take back the Senate and to redesign this entire economic system. That's what has to get done here.
Well, I assume, and Clifford Tasner from ADA, that's the kind of thing that your organization is working on. Is that right?
Well, absolutely. I mean, you absolutely outlined the problem. The structural Democratic, the institutional Democratic Party is basically a corporate centrist party. We have a right-wing fascist party. We have a corporate centrist party. The odd thing is that the constituents of that corporate centrist party are much more radical You know, the people who vote Democratic want Medicare for all. We want a living wage. We want us not to be involved in war making and war mongering. We want clean energy. We want to acknowledge that climate change is happening and come up with real solutions to it. And that's what most people, in fact, the majority of the country wants to strengthen Social Security rather than, as Dianne Feinstein wanted to do, was she wanted to raise the age of the people to be eligible for Social Security, and yet she still calls herself a Democrat. So we absolutely have to do that, and we are hamstrung by the fact that the structural Democratic Party itself is always working against us. Look at the DCCC. They try to find candidates with a lot of money who are very pro-corporate, who are going to be happy to take the corporate money and do their bidding. And we definitely need a change. And I just wanted to say, of the people running in Southern California, we've got three who are actually, you know, actually four who are reasonably progressive, a lot better than we could have got. You know, there's two candidates that we're going to let the DCCC do their business and try to elect them. We're not going to lift a finger for them because they don't have anything to offer us in terms of Medicare for all or any of the other issues we're working very hard on. So we have to do that. It is true that, you know, Kavanaugh and Gorsuch and all the other people on the Supreme Court who are appointed, you know, Thomas, Alito, Roberts, they have an agenda. It's a corporate agenda, and I would suspect you're right that a lot of the corporate Democrats don't really have a huge objection to it because their corporate overlords, the people who give them money, are on board with it, and they take their marching orders from them. And I find usually what happens, it's, you know, the Tom Perez strategy is let's find stuff that will unite all the Democrats then, rather than have a real house cleaning and really see what we need to do. So the message they chose for this last couple of years is Trump, 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 Russia, Russia, Russia. And that's all you hear all the time. And they do that because they feel that everyone will come on board with that. But progressives want to hear more. We want to hear what kind of positive things are you going to do. It's not enough to oppose Trump because at some point maybe Trump will be impeached. And then we'll have Mike Pence. And Mike Pence will be even more effective because he won't have any distractions while he signs into law the basic Christian dominionist sort of government. So, you know, we have to do better. We have to clean house. We have to have a real debate of what it is to represent progressives and the left in this country. And the ideas we're working on are winning ideas. And the reason Democrats lose elections is because a lot of them take these mealy-mouthed centrist opinions, you know, and incrementalist approaches that just don't inspire people to come out. You know, when Mr. Obama came in, we were ready for change. We were ready for a new deal. And he and Rahm Emanuel and a number of Republicans like Geithner and all of Clinton's kleptocrats who deregulated Wall Street – came in and bailed out the banks and didn't bail out Main Street. And so a lot of his constituents stayed home in 2010 and led us to where we are today. You know, now just as far as you want to talk about Kavanaugh, I do want to say...
Well, let me get to Sarah
here. Sexual assault stuff, he's perjured himself again and again and again. And my hope would be we'd get a radical enough Congress that they would start to impeach him once he's in. And it might be easier to impeach him than it might be to impeach somebody else that Trump would put up would be a lot cleaner, even though they'd have the same ideology.
Right. So, I'm going to say, now we only got a few minutes left, and Sarah, I want to come back to you. I'm going to go out on a limb here. Everything you guys have said has been beautiful. I'm going to say that while this guy is really is a corporatist, I think that his testimony will be remembered, Kavanaugh's testimony, which is so beautifully redone by Matt Damon. If you guys haven't seen Saturday Night Live, he was just spectacular. Right. God, because you have to remember that Matt Damon grew up in Boston next door to Howard Zinn, so he has a significant political background. But I'm going to say, and Sarah, you're the only one qualified on this station to address this, I'm going to say that Kavanaugh's testimony was so despicable and so disgusting that as a historian, me and maybe the rest of the profession will recognize that as the end of the patriarchy. Because this guy was such an embarrassment to our gender that I don't know how any man could ever want to hold power again. And I think that, you know, and it's certainly, it's a distraction to a certain extent, his sexual predations. But this may be, it's going to be the women who really lead the charge and restore the indigenous matriarchy to North America. What do you think about that small mouthful there, Sarah Nelson?
Well, I think I agree with you that millions of women were watching very carefully. Millions. there were millions of men. People, as you saw probably in some of the reports, were everywhere, watching it on their phones, watching it on television, everywhere, everywhere. This was probably more visible than they ever imagined it would be. And it is burned into our psyche now, I'm sure of that. And that is going to, it's going to fuel the rise of women to make some changes that absolutely have to be made. But I want to go back to what I said earlier about the right wing, because our consciousness and our clarity about what is really happening, in the same way that Danny just clarified the corporate aspect of Kavanaugh, that's our job. We all of us on this phone call, and I'm so happy to meet Cliff, I mean, all of us on this phone call and everyone like us, our job now is we really, and thank you for doing this all the time, Harvey, we really have to help people understand what exactly is happening, because we now know that we've got about 40% of the people that they poll. I don't know exactly, you know, if they're, that 40% are saying they support Trump, you know, and that's a lot. You can make change.
Yes, it is.
With 20%. You can make change. So what I'm very bothered by and have been for years now is how the right wing hides behind the name conservative. From the very beginning, they did that. When Reagan took power and they all surrounded him and came out with the mandate for leadership and all of this, that's when the Heritage Foundation went from being an unknown item to being something that the press called all the time. And that growth of the right wing ever since the election of Reagan is a very serious problem, because the moderate Republicans and the moderate Democrats are no match for the right wing. They are just easy targets for the right wing. The right wing is very disciplined and they're very hard-nosed, and they don't waver from being complete bad people, you know, in terms of their policies. And so, for instance, when Obama got elected, the right wing immediately called this meeting to say, we're not going to let this guy get anything through because we're not going to let him have any success. And they stuck to that. You know, they are very disciplined. And it's only the progressive that can be can confront effectively the right wing. Everything in between, the liberals, the moderates, the conservatives, they all get pushed over like being pushed over with a big truck. You know, we have to begin to understand this, that the progressive voice, it's imperative for the future, whether we're going to have any country, that the progressive voice gets stronger, clearer, and provides more leadership.
Absolutely. Well, beautifully said. Before we're about out of time, Sarah and Danny, how do people get a hold of you and send you support?
RomeroInstitute.org.
Okay, that's easy enough. R-O-M-E-R-O.
.org.
Institute, all one word, .org.
Yeah, R-O-M-E-R-O, Institute, all one word together, www.RomeroInstitute.org. And you'll see our two major projects there, the Green Power and the Lakota People's Law Project. And, you know, and we've been working for 40 years, and we will be working for another 20 at least.
And Sligo, I want to say just one more thing, too, is that I want to call to our attention here now. This is probably inappropriate at the very end of this whole conversation with the ADA, but the bottom line is that Michael Harrington, the head of the Democratic Socialist Organizing Committee, in his last book that he wrote, Present at God's Funeral, he said that until such time as the social democratic left of the Democratic Party in the United States comes, they will never come to power unless they come to understand and appreciate what it is that the Catholic left understands.
And okay, and I agree with that.
That's
Clifford Tassner at the ADA. Thank you so much, Clifford. Thank you, Danny and Sarah. Thanks to the crew in New York. We'll see you next week in Green Power and Wellness Show. And you guys are fantastic. It's been an honor to have you all. Take care.
Thank you, Harvey.
Don't you know we're gonna have a solar-topia?